right. Well, the Gremlins have struck again. Hello, this is North Shore Sports Night. We're recording it tonight due to connection problems, but we've got some good sports talk at any rate. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Tim Kearns is in studio, and we'll have our usual sports writers coming up here in just a little while. And a lot has gone on, obviously, in the last couple of weeks that Tim and I are going to bat around for a while here, and then we'll bring it into some local stuff. And I don't quite know where to start, Tim. I think one of the things that has been on my mind is the Olympics. I'm surprised that they were held and that they were as successful as they were. But what's her name? Simone Biles? Or what is her name? Simone?
Biles.
Simone Biles. All right. Is it Simone?
Yeah.
Okay. She followed into the footsteps of the tennis player, whose name escapes me right now, a world...
Naomi Osaka.
Yeah, Osaka, who played well in the Olympics, by the way. And the spotlight on the pressure and so on. And I saw a lot of nasty stuff on social media about, you know, she's a prima donna, this, that, and the other thing. And then I read about... other people defending her. And my thing is, Tim, in any sport, at first I thought, well, you know what? If she felt that way, she should have told her teammates and let someone else get on the team. But she didn't feel that way. That happened during the games themselves. And I don't know about you, Coach, but, I think gymnastics is one of the most dangerous sports there is.
Oh, it certainly is. You know, the pommel horse, the vault, you know, the beam, and the things that they do, the gymnastics that they do on all those devices. It's like, you got to be kidding me, Mike. You know, I would get hurt trying to get on.
Yeah, me too.
Any one of those devices, I would get hurt. All right, I'm done. You know, and she has been the face of the U.S. Olympic team for the last couple of years as they prepared for this Olympic game. She has been everywhere. She, you know, she's the one carrying, in essence, carrying the flag. And she just opened up about what she felt. And think of all, you know, how happy and smiley she was doing all those promos and commercials, and you know, but inside it's like, God, now I gotta do something like this, I gotta do that, and all on top of that, she
okay,
could not
on
fail.
Top of everything else,
she could not fail.
We've lost your microphone. Or hold on, it's not the mic. No, I got it back. All right, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, and the hype that this is going to be her Olympics, her Olympics. I mean, that's added pressure. But the thing is, the minute you're out of sync, it takes guts to pull the plug. Say, wait, I just can't do this today.
Yeah, you know, she went off in the middle of a spin and went, okay, I don't know where I am. And luckily, she, you know, she stuck to landing and didn't get hurt. And it takes a courageous person to come on and go, okay, I'm not really good right now. And everything hit her at that moment. And again, you have to applaud her for speaking up. Remember the last couple of Olympics, when some of the swimmers were having some head problems, and eventually who's the big swimmer, all of a sudden I can't think of his
Phelps.
Name. Phelps. He came out and said, I need help.
Hmm.
He came out and said, I need help. Because, you know, he was doing some marijuana. Oh, my God, it's such a terrible person. By today's, you know, standard. But he said, I need to go get some, I need counseling. And his commercials, now his endorsements, are he's doing them for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making people aware that no matter who you are, no matter how big of a star you are, it's okay to say, I need help. And I think she suddenly felt the pressure of everybody saying, you know, you're going to do this. You're going to win all these medals. You're going to lead the team. You're the face of the American Olympics. You're the greatest American Olympian ever. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And how old is she? How old is this kid? She's a kid still. And, you know, God bless her, she realized, like, you know, oh, my God, all these expectations that have been laid at my feet, sitting on my shoulders, you know, my God, you know, can I be me? And suddenly she found she couldn't be her. She couldn't not be perfect. She had to be perfect. She had to get the highest score. She had to defeat everybody around her. And, you know, I think everybody hoped that she would come back and compete. And she finally came back on the last day and competed. And she won a silver. But I think, you know, for all the, you know, USA Cycle fans out there, you know, these athletes are still human. Most of them are extremely young.
Yeah.
And the pressure that she's been under over the last 6 years, you can't help but blame her and recognize the fact that, okay, she had the guts to say, I need to step back. I need help. We have a team that is good enough to win everything without me. That's how good they are. And, you know, they finished with the team silver. You know, they won a number of golds. They won silvers. They won bronzes. And so they represented the country really well. And I think she represented the athletes very well. That now I think you may see more athletes going, I need to step back.
Mm-hmm.
I need some check down time.
It's weird because I didn't watch a lot of the Olympics. I watched some of the swimming, and I have a hard time watching gymnastics in the same way that I have a hard time watching figure skating because of the jumping. And I get so nervous watching gymnastics. I do, because I just, when I watch a NASCAR or whatever, I don't mind to see a wreck because they're relatively safe, okay? So I'm not looking for someone to get hurt. But, you know, that's part of the
deal. But that's why you watch. You'll watch
for
the car wreck.
Sort of do, sort of.
That's it. That's what the drivers, the people come in to see.
Spin outs and so on. You know, so, but I can't do that with figure skating, and I can't do that with gymnastics. I cannot watch figure skating because you see these jumps and you know, sooner or later, you're going to fall. That's part of the sport. And it just, it just makes me so nervous.
You know what scares me is when they're doing their floor routine and they go from one corner and they sprint across and then they start the somersaults and the flips and the twists and the turns and they're going, I sure hope they finish all that before they get to the other end.
And they land in a split and bounce up like Weeble's Wobble, but you don't fall.
Yeah.
I know. All right, so changing the subject. So much other stuff to talk about. We'll talk about the Celtics offseason here when we talk with Mike Grenier later on. We got golf coming up with Gary Larrabee, of course. But, it's kind of amazing to me to see that the Bruins have maintained interest over the summer by hiring new people, making contract negotiations work with, for example, with Taylor Hall, not so much with David Krejci. Mm-hmm. But the Red Sox, boy, have they been on a roller coaster. And maybe your impressions of watching yesterday, if you did watch it, Chris Sale. And one of the things that I find really cool about Chris Sale is he dived into his 2-week stint in the minor leagues.
You know, I was reading some of the summaries of that, and he loved it.
Yeah,
he loved the minor leagues. He actually paid for the players to stay an extra night in a hotel so they wouldn't have to come back late at night. And I'm thinking, okay, this guy is, you know, has got it figured out.
And you see what he said? He said, well, I'm going to be playing with these guys in the future, hopefully, so I hope they remember me.
Yeah, you know, and he took care of all of them. You know, he bought them stuff, and he bought them dinners. And he took all the bus rides. He could have just, you know, had his own little limo and zipped them to every game, or done a helicopter or a short private plane flight to these.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said, hell no, I'm going on the bus. You know, this is what it's all about. And so his teammates must have loved that because, you know, how often have they had some of the prima donnas get down there to rehab and these guys are again, you know, jetting around or taking a private plane or, you know, their own
and
private
then bus. They don't interact with the players at all. They come in, pitch, and leave.
Right. You know, and there was some talk, well, you know, they held them back. They didn't pitch them against the Yankees. They didn't pitch them against Toronto. They saved them for Baltimore, you know, a nice easy test. But one thing that I liked is there's a slight change in his motion where it seems a bit smoother. It's not as herky-jerk off of that shoulder and elbow. There was a lot more lengthening of the his delivery.
A little more sidearm. Looked like he
dropped
down a little bit.
And he just got out there after it. And, you know, he was still up there 94, 95, 96 on occasions. But again, the breaking ball got better as the day went on, and it was just like masterful. It's like he hadn't even missed a beat with it. Is he going to help? Certainly. But the bats have to stay alive. I mean, you know, the last two games you've won, you scored 22 and 16.
Mm.
You know, and in between you lose. Come on, you can't be doing that. You know, you can't be Jekyll and Hyde. You got to win the 1-0, the 3-2, the 2-1 games, and you've got to save your pitches. The bullpen has imploded at times. I mean, they were up 22-1.
Give up 7 runs
in the ninth inning. And they went. I saw the score the next day. I went, you've got to be kidding
me. Right, right.
You know that. That doesn't bode well. You're absolutely crushing a team that should have no hope of coming back, and yet you allow them to score 7 runs in the last inning. Not a good sign.
I'm happy about the way Bobby Dalbec has suddenly come alive. He looks like a freaking ball player. He just does. And, boy, those home runs he hit over the weekend.
He is just he's your prototypical big, lanky first baseman. And, you know, you jerk him in and out of the line. And this is the problem that I have, you know, with rotating guys every couple of days. If you're in a groove and all of a sudden you're sitting down so someone else can get play, you know, you who are in a groove, you're hitting really well, you're seeing the ball really well, you're making great contact, and then you're sitting. Okay, and it's like, oh, God, you know. Spot a guy a game after 10, 12 games, not after 1 or 2, especially if he's in a groove. But Cora and all these other, I don't know how much it is with other teams, but God, all they do is they just take these guys and they just shuffle the decks, and I don't really care.
Well, you drive in 12 or 13 runs over the weekend, you've earned a spot to play for a while.
He should be your starting first baseman.
My goodness. And he's got the average up now up over the Mendoza line, finally.
They take Devers out and they move him over to third base. Ugh.
And what's his name? Duran. He started to hit over the way. Granted, it's the Baltimore Orioles, but it's still the major leagues.
Yeah. What was it? Yeah, if you're going to play him, play him. Right field is set. I guess.
Oh, is he something, Renfro? Wow, what a pickup!
If he's not throwing people out by 10 feet,
oh.
he's hitting the ball 450.
What a
feet.
Gun!
Yeah, he does. He reminds you of Dewey Evans a lot because he throws the ball down. His release point is out in front. He's throwing line drives to these bases. Then that's why he's getting these guys out. He's not throwing parabolas like a lot of guys throw. He's got it down on all. He's charging the ball. He's taking it quickly. He's one stepping, and he's out in front with his with his release. And that's a great thing to see. But there's just to me, I just. Can't stand the shuffling. I can't take this.
Okay. We got Gary Larrabee coming up here in a minute as we record this tonight due to connection problems, and my computer is just sending me all kinds of weird messages. Excuse me, so we'll have to sort that out over the week. And maybe later on we'll bring up the Patriots because I have my thoughts and I'm sure you have your thoughts.
Mac.
And looked like Cam's finally starting to get a little angry. So you know,
yeah.
I still would put if it was me, I'd convert him into a tight end. I'd want him as tight end.
He wants to run. He wants to run. Put him in the backfield.
Oh, do that.
Oh, no, they already found the kid to run in the backfield.
That's what I'm saying. Put a tight end, man. I tell you.
And, well, they may need to because they lost another tight end yesterday or today.
Not Jonnu Smith.
No. He's already hurt.
Hunter Henry's hurt.
Henry's hurt.
What's his name?
Chase or something?
Oh, Winovich?
No, Chase.
No.
Lacoste. He got drilled, I guess, in the practice with Philadelphia. Defensive lineman caught him with his shoulder on the helmet.
Mm-mm.
And lights out. Lights out.
That's
so,
not cool.
Yeah, so he's out for a couple of days anyways.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back with Gary Larrabee. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with Gary Larrabee, and Gary, of course, golf writer, sports historian. Welcome, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing wonderfully, Rick. How are you doing?
Well, it's one of those nights when technology wins and we lose, but other than that, pretty good. We've had some interesting weather. It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked golf, so where do you want to start?
Let's start with some late-breaking news like they always start the national newscast every night of the week. Lots of late-breaking news. How about the Mass Mid-Amateur Qualifier that was held today at New England Country Club, guys? Whoever that is that in Bellingham, Tim? New England Country Club?
Ooh, that sounds like a place for it to be.
It's a good place. Anyways, we had one player from the area qualify there for the Massachusetts Mid-Amateur coming up, I think, in late November. Late September, I should say. Sean Gilday from Bass Rock shot a 1-under 70. He was one of only three players to break par. So Sean Gilday will be going to the state mid-amateur. Congratulations, Sean. That's number one, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, let's tip the fedora to a couple of other local guys who qualified for the Massachusetts senior amateur qualifying today. That was at Belmont Country Club. Bob Bogart from Salem shot 75 and made it. 73 was the medal score. And a very familiar name, Mike McKenna from Far Corner, made the grade, making the final score that qualified at 76 with Colin Ahern from Indian Ridge. And, of course, you guys must remember that Mike McKenna, just a couple of weeks ago, came out of nowhere to qualify for the USGA senior amateur coming up at the end of this month. At the Country Club of Detroit, and Frank Vanner from Ferncroft will be joining him. So it's been a very good week, a very good summer already for 58-year-old Mike McKenna, who's kind of making a little bit of a comeback in competition after being away from it for 4 or 5 years.
Well, it's good to see. You know, the muscle memory is certainly still there. Wish I still had some muscle memory.
That's another story for another day. But, Tim, how about that six-man playoff flag yesterday at the Wyndham Championship down in beautiful Greensboro, North Carolina?
You know, Gary, I have to admit, I didn't watch any of that this weekend. The wife had me doing the honey list. And I was outside, so I didn't get to see much of it. But you get a six man. That's a long afternoon of golf.
It is, and I didn't see it either, Tim. So don't feel too bad. You're off the hook since I'm off the hook. Six players shot 15 under par, 265, and they had a six man playoff. I believe they went out in two threesomes. They played the first hole, see who stayed in and who left out, and then they played a second hole. I'm surprised it only took two holes for Kevin Kisner to win his fourth PGA Tour triumph, maybe the most unknown four-time winner of a PGA Tour event in the history of the game. Mm. The theory was yesterday, making a three-foot birdie putt in the second extra hole. He wins the, hold your breath, guys, he wins the $1,152,000 first place check.
Wow.
Good for Kevin Kisner. Of course, he's trying to make the Ryder Cup team, and he hopes this will certainly help his chance.
What does that do for him in terms of FedEx standings?
He's in great shape there, but of course, unfortunately, our North Shore standard bearer on the PGA Tour, Rob Oppenheim, needed a couple, at least one big week of these last 2 weeks to maybe make it in the top 125. He didn't do it. He missed the cut last week in Lake Tahoe, but this week he did make the cut, but finished as also ran way down near the bottom of the pack. So he finishes like 161. In the FedEx Cup, you need to be in the top 125 to advance to this week's first of three gigantuan purse events. This one's at the Northern Trust in New Jersey. So he has to go back and now play in three events that they are calling the Corn Ferry Playoffs. And if he finishes in the top 25 combined money after those 3 weeks, he will regain his tour card. That field's going to be 150 good players, guys. Oof. The top 75 money winners from the Corn Ferry Tour and the 126th through 200th place finishers in the FedEx Cup point standings. So Rob has a lot of work to do these next 2 weeks, but he's qualified or regained his card, I should say, this way before. Let's hope he can do it again.
That's for sure. We wish him the best of luck. Gary, how does one prepare for what he's up against?
Go ahead.
Is it more physical than mental, or mental than physical?
Well, I got to believe when you're 41 years of age and you don't hit it out there anywhere near as long as the young kids do, sometimes it drives the 20, 30, 40 yards behind the drives of the young kids. It's probably 50% physical and 50% mental. In Rob's case, he's been there before. He's gotten past this test before and regained his PGA Tour card. But, you know, we've talked about this for, God, 5, 6, 7 years. Rob still hasn't really gotten over that proverbial hump, which really means winning a PGA Tour event or winning a lot of money some year to move up to that next level of player on the PGA Tour. So I don't know if he's going to be able to succeed this time around, but he's got 3 weeks to try to do it. And, of course, if he can regain his card, I know he has the adequate funding to go back out there and do it for another year. And, of course, the new tour starts up after the FedEx Cup playoffs and right after the Ryder Cup, the end of September in Wisconsin.
Well, again, you know, we wish Rob luck. Hopefully he can find that consistency that he needs to keep that card going.
We'll see if he can do it. But we've had some other interesting things happen, guys, since we last talked. If you can give me just a couple more quick minutes. We had a couple of kids play very, very well at the 103rd Massachusetts Junior Championship held at Indian Pond down in the South Shore in Kingston. Aiden Emmerich from Kernwood and is another kid from Kernwood, Sean Dully, both played very strong in the 36-hole qualifying rounds. Emmerich shot 138. Emmerich shot 141. Dully shot 144. They both made match play. And that's where Aiden, who was leading after the first day of the 36-hole qualifying, after the opening with a 68, Aiden lost his first round match, but Dully won his first round match. then lost the second round match 3-1 to Colin Spencer of Cumaquid. So that was the best of our North Shore representation at the state junior, but pretty good for those two young fellows. And of course, we know Sean Dully as the son of a longtime Kernwood pro, Frank Dully. We should mention this right now. The club had a very nice get together for Frank and his family a couple of weeks ago, marking his 30th year at Kernwood, his 24 years as head pro, and 6 years prior to that as the number one assistant. A very nice night honoring Frank, and they'll hopefully have a lot more opportunities to honor him for some more milestone years moving forward. On the same weekend, guys, Steve Clayton, who's now in his 31st year as the head pro at Rockport, was honored as well because they were going to honor him on his 30th anniversary last year, but of course the pandemic prevented that from happening. But they had another nice, wonderful time for Steve at the club, and marking now his 31st year in charge. A couple of great guys who have been great examples of how to be a very, very successful and a very good head golf professional at your club, and we wish both of them many more years at their two clubs.
Gary, we had an unexpected winner. Was it at Salem a couple of weeks ago? Ki Kwan?
Oh, yes, the North Shore Amateur, Ki Kwan, a longtime contender at the North Shore Amateur. He's a member of the host club, which is Far Corner, of course. And Ki finally won his first North Shore Amateur. He's been a contender many times, been in the hunt, and been in there right down to the final few holes. It never happened for him, but thank you for reminding me. It did happen last week at Far Corner, the 46th annual North Shore Amateur. And he shot a couple of even par rounds of 72 for 144. And I think he beat Colin Brennan from Indian Ridge by 3 shots. And it's finally happened for Ki Kwan. We're all happy for him. He's a great guy, and we all like him here on the North Shore.
Yeah, it was a great story. He picked up the game when he was 14 and been plugging away at it. And like you said, it finally paid off.
And as we've said before, and Tim, you know it better than anybody, it's never too late to start playing the game of golf, whether you want to be a competitive player or just a player for fun. But he has brought his game along in leaps and bounds in maybe the last 10 years. And another example, I'm not sure how old he is. He may be 50. Do you know how old he is, Tim?
He's around that, yeah, because I was kind of amazed. What was really so satisfying reading the story was the smile that he had on his face, the picture in the paper. That was one happy individual.
And much, very much deserved. And he's been competing locally for many years, and it was great to see him finally break through against a very, very good field. Because we have to tip our hats to Bob Flynn, the director of golf up at Far Corner, and his 35-year head professional John O'Connor for putting on another terrific event for the region's top amateurs, and we certainly have to salute Ki Kwan.
Yep. So again, I didn't want to let that go by without having us mention that one.
Well, thank you for doing so. So now we get the Northern Trust this week, guys, and some very prominent names did not make the field of 125, but which includes Ricky Fowler, of all people, one of the most overrated players in the history of the game. But
yeah, but he makes a good commercial.
Yeah, we'll leave that. He's done very well, very well. There's still a lot more golf to go, guys. We got the FedEx Cup playoffs for 3 weeks. We got the Ryder Cup at the end of September, and the starting of the new year of the PGA Tour. And the women are over in Scotland just finishing up the Scottish Open for women, and Ryan O'Toole won that event, another unknown name breaking through. And lots more golf to talk about, guys.
All right. You got a feature coming up in the paper this week, Gary?
I do. I'm writing about this week, Rick, a young man and a young lady from Danvers and Peabody, John Lawrence and Pam Farabee, who started a company 20 years ago called Tournament Solutions. They have grown to be the number one leading golf gift and award providing company in America. They have just been purchased recently, well, not that recent, last year actually, by the company that's based in New Bedford, guys, called Ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they are the foremost maker of golf caps and overall headwear in America.
Cool.
And they have now joined forces. And it's a great victory for John from Danvers, Pam from Peabody, for what they started with just the two of them in a very small office in Danvers 20 years ago. They're now going to be out and doing more stuff on the big golf venues of the world, and we wish them the very best now that they're part of our head.
Awesome, awesome. The dream never dies. We'll look forward to that, and Gary, look forward to seeing you next week.
Look forward to it, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Be well.
Thank you, Gary.
Be well.
All right. That's Gary Larrabee, sports writer, sports historian, golf writer, and...
All-around good guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And a machine, a sports machine. All right. We'll take a break. Come back with Mike Grenier as you're listening to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. Recorded, but that's okay.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
All right, we are joined now by Mike Grenier, sports writer as well, after talking with Gary. We're going to talk, Mike. Mike, it's, well, first of all, welcome back, Mike. It's, I haven't talked with you in a couple of weeks. How you doing?
Right, yeah, I know. And I guess in those 2 weeks, the Celtics still didn't make the world champion, or they didn't win the Olympic championship, or didn't Tatum contribute to the Olympic title, though, right?
Yep.
Jason
yep.
Tatum contributed to the Olympic title.
Everybody said he had a very good... very good tournament.
And how does Pritchard get 92 points in a game? I mean, how does
you
that
know,
work?
Yeah, I didn't get that. I mean, was he the only player on the court? I mean, I'm not quite sure what that's about.
Was that a 6-hour game?
You know, what kills me is, you know, where was this kind of effort and production? Not that you can score those kind of points, but I mean, that kind of ability to put the ball in the hoop last year?
Well, you know, I think, though, Tim, I think to be fair to the kid, he was one of the bright spots on a disappointing team. I really think, you know, being a rookie coming out of Oregon and not knowing how good he would be in the pros, he made a pretty good, strong impression in his first season. So I kind of have hopes for him, high hopes, that I don't consider him a starter or anything like that, at least not for a couple more years if he keeps developing, but he can be certainly a key role player off the bench.
Mike, I want to ask you, I wanted to start by asking you about how the Celtics have, if relevance isn't the right word, remain relevant during the summer. They're still getting some ink in the summer. They're staying out in the front pages, even though they haven't made any big blockbuster. They acquired this guy Schroeder. That looks
right.
To be a good pickup. So it's kind of cool that they're staying in the paper every day.
Right, and you know we can't read too much. And I agree with you, Rick. They have stayed in the forefront of the news, despite the fact that the Red Sox are still in the playoff hunt and all that stuff, and the Patriots are about to start. But you're right. But you kind of wonder if Brad Stevens, and they have been in the news, they've acquired some players, they've gotten rid of some players, Kemba Walker being the foremost one. But I'm wondering if these moves that they're making right now are sideways moves. In other words, like, they finished 36-36 this past season, then they went out and lost in five games to the Nets. So they finished 37-40. So have they really improved themselves this year? It remains to be seen. On the surface of it, they look like kind of a borderline playoff hopeful, meaning like they could finish 6th or 7th or 8th or something like that and just sort of creep into the playoffs with a, you know, above 500 or a game or two below 500. I mean, obviously you still start everything, you know, we mention this all the time, everything starts with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and hopefully their development continues. But beyond that, what have they really done? They got Schroeder, who, by the way, how smart is he or his agent when they were offered $84 million to the Lakers and turned it down, and they were forced to take a $5.9 million deal from the Celtics, right, Tim? You and I should be in that position. I think, and you too, Rick, if we had a chance to take $84 million guaranteed, I don't think we'd be passing it up.
I don't know. That 5.4 just looks too tempting.
Yeah, really.
You know?
Come on.
The opportunity to play for the Celtics, you know, giving up $78 million.
To play for the Celtics, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But on a serious note, I think Schroeder is a good acquisition. He's a guard. He's not really strictly a point guard, but he's a guard who can handle the ball and who could give you anywhere from 15 to 20 points a game. And he will have that opportunity with the Celtics because, obviously, Evan Fournier, you know, took a contract with the Knicks, so you're missing his 20 points per game. So, you know, there'll be some scoring opportunities for Schroeder. And, you know, they're going to be a decent team, but they're not going to bowl you over. And here's the thing, Tim, I'd like to get your take on this, and Rick, too. The thing that everyone seems to be counting on, including Brad Stevens, I think, is that a year from now, Bradley Beal, who is, you know, a very good friend of Jason Tatum's, he'll be a free agent, and everyone is just assuming that he's going to sign with the Celtics and team up with Jason Tatum to form at least a partial super team. You know, what makes you think for sure that Bradley Beal is going to come to the Celtics a year from now? If the Celtics finish 500, will Bradley Beal want to join a team that's kind of still rebuilding, or will he want to go to the Lakers or the Clippers or a team that has the foundation of a championship-caliber team? Oh. I just don't understand the assumptions that a lot of experts and people are making that Bradley Beal, who averaged 31 points a game this year, great scorer, I just don't buy into the whole act that he's going to sign with the Celtics because he's Jason Tatum's friend.
How many guards can you put on one team? How many guys can you put that are 6'2", 6'3", to 6'6", on a team and expect to be successful, you know, in today's NBA? How can you expect to be successful if you've got nobody to get the ball
right
off the backboard to start a fast break?
Right.
You know, because this is somebody shoots and everybody runs the other way.
Right. And you know, but my whole point, Tim, right, is that Bradley Beal isn't necessarily going to sign with the Celtics.
No.
And then to bring up your point, Tim, the Celtics reacquired Enes Kanter, who is actually is going to be a very good teammate. He can go out and get you 13, 14 rebounds, but he's a definite defensive liability. And that's been the up and down nature of his career, because he can't stay with a team for too long because he tries hard. He's just not a very good defensive player. He's not quick. He can't block shots. He gets overwhelmed in the paint. He can give you some scoring and some rebounds. So it's kind of like he's sort of like a trick-or-treat player.
Mike, let me ask you, with respect to Kanter, can some of his deficiencies be covered up if Robert Williams continues to ascend?
Rick, you're right. I mean, either, you know, the new coach can go with a double big lineup and have Robert Williams and Kanter playing together, with Robert Williams being a much better defensive player. Or obviously, if Robert Williams is strong enough to play more minutes next season, mm-hmm. if he's developed that quickly, he's going to get the bulk of the minutes, and you wouldn't have to have Kanter in there for more than, let's say, 16 to 18 minutes a game, mm-hmm. you know?
Okay.
So that is the, hopefully, the silver lining in getting Enes Kanter, is that he can rebound. He's kind of a much better than average rebounder, but also he's a below average defender. But Robert Williams, obviously can be a major, major factor up front next season if he can stay healthy.
You know, do you bring in Wes Unseld? Do you bring in Dave Cowens to show these guys that are 6'8" how to play defense, how to play tough, how to box out, how to get a rebound and start a fast break?
Well, I think
These guys, you know, he's got to get stronger. And I think back to Dave Cowens. You know, 6'8", and I saw him up close one time at the Garden. And I went, oh my God, he is so skinny, but he was wiry.
And he had a ferocious competitive nature.
Oh God, was that unbelievable. And you know, he had always played with a wide base.
Yep.
When he got down to playing defense, he was almost in a semi squat.
Yeah, like
his legs were spread, his butt was down, and he had such a sense of balance that he could move quick left or right. He could reverse pivot on a guy, you know, and it's like it was textbook basketball. And the same thing, you watch Unseld, you watch Willis Reed. These guys were all 6'8", 6'9", nobody 7 foot, but they were ferocious.
Yeah, and they were fundamentally sound.
Yes.
That made them better than average players. And Cowens, of course, a phenomenal player. I mean, I saw his entire career up close. And he was an undersized center who could compete with the very best in the game, including Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yep. Oh.
Had about 7 or 8 inches on him.
Yeah, he used to love to run him off the court.
Oh yeah,
that was Dave's thing. I'll just run up and down the court and make him chase me.
right. He was tremendous. Absolutely one of my favorite Celtics of all time.
Oh yeah, for sure. And but you don't see guys with that kind of appetite, that kind of ferocity, that kind of intensity, or that kind of knowledge.
Right. Now. You know what? And you want to bring up, it's funny because as soon as you said the lack of intensity and all that, a name that we haven't talked about on the current Celtics is a guy who was a high draft pick, Romeo Langford. And he has had a couple of years where he just hasn't played much because of injuries or whatever. And then I tune into a summer league game a few days ago, and he's not even dressed to play.
Yeah.
And I know he's had one or two good games, but why? Here's a guy that needs the playing time, and everyone said he's got all this promise defensively and offensively, but every time I look at the screen, he's not available. Part of being a good player is being available.
Yep.
He's just not available enough, or at least in his first two seasons, hasn't shown the capability of being available. And I don't know if that's chronic injuries or improper training or lack of desire. I don't want to put that on him. However, he just hasn't been there. He has not been there.
You know, at some point, you know, you hate to say this about any player, you got to cut your losses.
Right.
You know, if you've got to do a buyout, you do a buyout, you move on, you find another player for that spot that's going to give you more of what you're looking for.
Right.
You know,
but I think, Tim, the reason they want to hold on to him for another year is he was like a number 14 pick overall in the first round. And, you know, they must have seen something in him, but it's something that we as fans or media have not seen ourselves, because he has not played enough basketball for us to make any kind of good judgment about him as a good player or a bad player. He just hasn't played enough games.
Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of hoping that the way the Celtics were playing as a team in this summer league, they can declare that this will, because of the COVID, this will be the NBA season, and the Celtics will win the championship.
Not only are they 4-0, but they've won their games by an average of one game I watched, they won by like 44.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and they're winning games by 30 and 40. And, you know, there's one kid, Tim, and Rick, I don't know if you've noticed him, and actually he's a mature college player, college grad, this kid Hauser out of the University of Virginia, who hit like 6 of 8 threes in a game that I watched. He's one of those kids who played 4 years of college ball and in a good system, the University of Virginia, and he looks like a desirable maybe intriguing prospect who, and he's 6'8". So Timmy's not one of those 6'2" or 6'3" guys that we talk about. He seems like a very solid player, and he might make the team and come off the bench and get you 10, 15 a game. We don't know.
Yeah.
But he certainly is an intriguing prospect here in the summer of 2021.
You know, especially if he can come down, play the wing, you know, and drain a few threes, go in low post. You know, somebody teach him a hook shot. I know they don't even know what that is anymore in the NBA.
Oh, no, I think hook shots have gone out along with fast break baskets.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. You know, I mean, Dave Cowan's throwing in hook shots. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, it's the no fun league. I'm sorry, you know, to watch guys run down the court. Somebody throws it up, everybody runs the other way. It's you know what it is? It's like watching basketball via F Troop. Everybody goes the other way.
Yeah, that's quite the analysis. And Rick, you know, I know we love to talk about Bill Russell.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, if you guys want to read an unbelievable look at those early Celtics teams, well, actually, the latter part of Bill Russell's career, when he was the player coach when they won the championship in 68-69, Lee Montville, who was a longtime Boston Globe writer, just came out with a book about a month ago called Tall Men, Short Shorts, in which he's a phenomenal writer, Lee Montville.
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
I've known him for decades. But he concentrates his book on the final series versus the Lakers when the Lakers had Will Chamberlain, and Bill Russell and the Celtics obviously had a lot of elder statesmen, and they beat the Lakers in 7 games. And his account of that team and that season is just magnificent. And I tell you, I'm reading this book by Lee Montville about those glory days of the Celtics, and I can't put it down, but I need to put it down, otherwise I'll be up for 24 straight hours reading this
Right.
book.
Isn't there another Bill Russell book out too? Because I saw a special on Russell, and they were talking about another book, and that the one you mentioned by Montville wasn't the title, and maybe I'm confusing it, but I thought there was another book.
It might be, Tim, but the one that just came out by Lee Montville has been getting a lot of praise. And
definitely got to get that one.
He's always, and you know, Gary Larrabee, you know, who you spoke to, he and I have been discussing this over the phone because Gary Larrabee and I were just sort of ready to join the media 2 or 3 years after that particular season. We followed those Celtics very closely, and Rick, my wife and I had season tickets. Half season ticket plans at the old Boston Garden to watch that team, $2 per game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Lee Montville. Then you go to Peter Gammons and those guys. And who was Will McDonough?
Will McDonough, of course. Yes.
And Bob Ryan. I mean,
Bob Ryan.
What a staff they had. And then on the other side, you know, you had Tim. What was his name over at the
helm?
Tim Horgan. And
great guy.
All kinds of great guys over there as well. And the thing, I'm glad you brought the book up because I've been telling Tim, when we talk history or whatever, and I think the last 4 years, or even going back to the 90s, the way Congress has been not working so well together, I think there's been an epic fail in education, and we're both educators. And to me, civics should be brought back in. And one of the things that I would encourage if I were a teacher teaching civics is I would teach the story of the Boston Celtics when Bill Russell first came to the team and what Red Auerbach did with that mini society that he had there in terms of the integration of players, and I mean that from all aspects
correct,
of life.
Correct. And how about this, Rick? During that glory days of the mid to late 60s Celtics, the Celtics office staff consisted of 4 people. When Bill Russell was coaching, and you know, basically Red Auerbach, you know, kicked himself upstairs and became the sole general manager, there were literally 4 people in the Celtics office full time: Red Auerbach, his secretary Mary Whalen, Jeff Cohen, who was like the assistant general manager, although he got paid like a gopher. Okay, and the fourth person was Howie McHugh, the old-time goalie who was the Celtics PR man, and he was in his 70s at the time.
Wow.
So today you have four people just holding towels for the players coming off
that's
the
right,
court.
That's right.
But there, think of how they made that work. How Red Auerbach, with three other people in the office, engineered championship after championship after championship, and of course he had a very conscientious and a phenomenal player coach in Bill Russell, and he had players who bought into Bill Russell's system, guys like John Havlicek and Sam Jones and Casey Jones and Bailey Howell and that whole crew. So it's amazing how so few people were involved in building such a magnificent dynasty.
Did you ever get a chance to interview Bill Russell?
Yes.
What was he like to talk with?
Of course, like I said, I came along just a few years after he was no longer with the Celtics.
Right.
But when he became the Seattle Supersonics coach, mm-hmm. and they would come into town, naturally I would interview him either before or after the game, talking about the game and that kind of thing. And, I wish I had been around when he was playing to be in the locker room with him. I mean, obviously I saw him play, but I was not in the locker room.
Yeah.
During his playing days at Celtics, because that predates me by a few years, you know.
What was he affable though, and I don't.
But you have to ask the right questions. The thing about Russell, I think Gary Larrabee would say the same thing because
okay.
he dealt with him as well. He could be, as Lee Montville describes him in his current book, he calls him distant. He could be distant,
sure.
and aloof.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's because he had a certain amount of pride in his. He had racial pride and he had personal pride.
Yeah.
And he didn't really. He didn't really kowtow to people who didn't know their stuff.
Okay.
Whereas, like, you had to know your stuff. You had to ask the pertinent questions and not just these off-the-wall things.
That seems reasonable. I remember, and this we got to get out of here in a minute, Mike, but I remember a press conference that Bill Parcells did when he was Patriots coach.
Yes.
And his answer was, that's a stupid question. I'm not answering that.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah, I think anybody that's been in journalism, or you guys, radio, we've all been on that side of the ledger where, you feel a little guilty if you don't have, you're not prepared.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mike, before we go, my favorite Red Auerbach quote.
Yes.
Red, how come you don't have any assistant coaches? Just another guy I got to teach.
That's right. And, you know, it's so funny. In the book, Lee Montville points out that unlike when the Russell was coaching and he had no assistants, and when Red Auerbach was coaching and he had no assistants,
yep.
the current Celtics, when Brad Stevens was coaching, they had four or five assistants, not to mention the strength and conditioning coach, the psychological coach, there's a coach for everything that a player does off the court as well as on the court. And obviously those old Celtics didn't have that luxury, and they certainly didn't make the money that these guys make.
Yeah, didn't travel.
Oh, how about, was he going back to the Clippers from L.A.?
Yes.
For $174 million for 4 years.
Kawhi Leonard, yeah.
Kawhi Leonard, holy Jesus.
Well, and how about Chris Paul, very good player, but he's 37 years old, and he just opted out of his contract with the Suns so they could extend his contract, and he's getting like 4 years and $160 million, at the age of 37. You know, by the time he finishes his contract, he'll be like 40 years old.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, my insurance, my health insurance and my retirement package went up almost 50% per month.
Really?
It went up $116 a month.
Yeah.
So you guys are talking stuff that I can't even fathom.
Mine only went up $25.
$116. Yeah, I've got to call GIC and find out what the story is. $116. Yeah. Okay. It almost doubled.
There has to be a way around that, hopefully, Rick.
Oh, my God, I don't know. Hey, Mike, this is great. I love when you can combine the present with the past and give us some context. It's fantastic. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And Lee Montville's not asking me to talk about his book, but Gary Larrabee and I have been talking so enthusiastically because we got to know those players eventually and those teams, and many of the media people that Montville talked about across the nation were people that Gary Larrabee and I would have been with at the Boston Garden with those visiting teams and all that. But it's a magnificent look at the 1968-69 Celtics. I think any Celtics fan would go nuts reading this book.
And the title, once again, Mike?
Is called Tall Men, Short Shorts.
Short Shorts, so yeah, okay.
Lee
hey, Mike,
Montville.
It's been great, man. Well, I expect to do it next Monday night again. And we'll be live. I figured out what the problem was.
Sounds great, Rick. And Tim, we'll talk about big men if they can find
all right. And maybe they'll be in short shorts.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Mike.
See you, Mike.
Stay well.
Thanks an awful lot.
Okay, guys.
Mike Grenier, God, it's fun. He puts that stuff I love the historical context of the Boston Celtics. I mean,
well, when you're as old as we are, we can talk about all those old times because we were there.
The civil rights aspect of it, Tim. Oh. I think it's, I don't know that it's underplayed, but I wish it had a little more.
I think it,
spread around that knowledge a little bit more.
I think it is, and it wasn't well known at that time either.
Yeah.
You know, but the Celtics were a team that stood by each other, and when they encountered racism, they collectively as a group responded to it. Walk into a restaurant, oh, they can't, sir, they can't sit here. Well, none of us can. Yeah. Out they'd go. And go into a hotel, they can't sit. Out they went.
It started at the top.
And it didn't matter to them, you know, to make that stand. They made the stand, and it's something that should get more notoriety now for what it represented at the time. But imagine if it had gotten more positive notoriety when it happened.
And I remember reading a lot of stories as a kid about Bill Russell and how, and the stories alluded to how angry he was. And he came across as, you know, angry all the time. I remember well, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah.
And I also remember reading about the pride he had in being who he was, mm-hmm. and about his family and also about the team. I just think it's one of the most remarkable stories on how they overcame. Talk about adversity.
Yeah.
What those guys went through, the African Americans on that team. And you're right, shoulder to shoulder, man, everywhere they went. Okay, final. You got 2 minutes. Cam versus Mac.
You saw the future of the Patriots on Thursday night. You know, Mac Jones. And he looked cool. He stood in the pocket. He made his reads. When he saw his receiver, he got rid of it very quickly. He got rid of it accurately. Would have been great if his receivers were able to pull in those two long passes that he threw, one for a touchdown. But that's the stuff that he's capable of doing. And he threw those passes with a lot of people around him. You know, as far as Cam, you know, respect, I deserve it. You know, that's not the way you operate in a Bill Belichick camp. You shut your mouth, you win your job on the field, and, you know, if it's about respect, I think Bill will have a little talk with them, because no one is disrespecting them. You know, it's just, it's the fact of life is you've got some major competition from this draft choice, and, you know, you got two games to really win the job now, because Mac Jones has shown that, you know, he's as advertised.
One of the things Tom Brady always said in his post-game conferences or even in his other interviews, he always used the word we, and when he did, he always would say, we have to get better, including me. I have to do a better job, which comes down from Belichick as well. And it surprised me that Cam said that or tweeted that or whatever it was, because up to this point, he has been the quintessential teammate, and he's been a leader. And I really want to root and love Cam Newton. It's just when you watch him out there, it's almost painful to watch the offense in operation.
You know,
and he's a great, great athlete.
Yeah, he is a tremendous athlete. You know, I don't think he's a tremendous quarterback anymore. You know, he only had the first couple series to show stuff before Jones came in. And, you know, right off the bat, he hits his first pass. So that drove the crowd crazy. And I'm sure Cam was a little upset the fact that Jones got a great ovation when he did come in, because obviously he's the fan favorite. Everybody's looking at him going, Tom Brady. Because what you see in Jones is, again, a kid who makes quick reads. He's coming from that Alabama dink and dunk offense where you give it to the back, you give it to the slot receiver and let them make hay. And every now and then you drop it over the head of the defense when you can catch them checking up. That's worked for the Patriots for the last 20 years, you know, and people are seeing that, and they like the fact that he was cool. They like the fact that he sets up quick, five-step drop, sets up, sets his feet, steps into the throw, and he's accurate. His throws are there.
When he ran the 2-minute offense in the third quarter, that wasn't against the other teams once, though, was it?
I don't think so. I think by the third quarter they were playing against it. But you're still running it against NFL players. You're running against You're running it against their twos. And what Belichick is evaluating is how well is he doing running the offense, getting the team.
Did you see him moving players around, changing at the line of scrimmage? Yeah. That was
pretty
cool.
Getting the players to recognize the play. Here we go. Up. Let's go. And again, recognizing the open man right away and getting rid of it. That's what Belichick wants to see in that 2-minute offense. Get us down the field.
Yep.
Get us some in range to get some points.
Well, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun coming up, and we'll see how the Red Sox do down in the Bronx tomorrow. Hey, what about Field of Dreams? I didn't see it, and everybody said it was spectacular.
I saw bits and pieces of the game. I saw the replay of the teams coming out of the cornstalk. And then I saw the replay of Kevin Costner coming out, and the fans were wild. But that's not the actual field.
Right. That they
played on. You could see the house in the background and the field just in front, the actual field that they – from Field of Dreams, in front of it, you can see that, and then further out into the cornfield is the field that they actually made. But I mean, what a great thing that you'd like to see them send all major league teams through that venue.
I'd like to see that. You know how you have the winter classic in hockey. Maybe they can do that in baseball.
You know, it
but the Field of Dreams was Chicago versus New York, wasn't it, in the movie?
It was Chicago.
Because it was a Chicago Blackhawks, Black Sox thing.
Black Sox, yeah. And it was, I mean, and that was the whole premise.
Yeah.
And I guess they were hitting bombs everywhere.
Yeah.
And then the dramatic.
Oh, yeah, the win.
You know.
For the win.
In the bottom of the ninth. Yeah, let's rock one out of here.
Oh.
You know, great for the fans, great for Major League Baseball.
I'd love to
great
see.
Great for movie buffs.
You could do that. You know, it seems to me that would be a draw for your major rivalry, like it is like the Winter Classic. You know, have your big rivalry game, pick a team once a year. That would be so cool.
I think that they should do one once a month out there. You know,
it's just with travel they could do that. A day off before a day off. Yeah,
yeah. You know, okay, you guys are gonna go there. You got and okay, you know. Dodgers Giants out there.
Yeah.
You know, Yankees Mets, you're going out.
Yeah.
Oh, the fans would go wild.
Oh, you know it.
Fans would go wild.
Cool.
Like Red Sox Cleveland. You know?
I figured out what went wrong. We've been live for the last 15, 20 minutes. We've been on the air. User error. Not my machine. User error. Which it usually is, but you know.
Aren't you the user?
I'm the man. My error.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. We have to do better. I have to do better.
Hmm.
And I will. All right.
We have to do better.
All right. Yeah, we do. We do. We got football coming up. We didn't even talk about that in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to getting out there again, Coach. You?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I think Paul Ingram will be with us. We're going to be on one channel only this year. One game a week. We might do two occasionally on a Saturday, a Friday and a Saturday, but for most part it'll be a Friday evening, and we'll have that schedule posted very soon. Looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, you know, you, Paul, focus on the games, and I'll do my remote thing from somewhere.
Or you could be on the field for the post game stuff if that is better for you wherever we are.
Well, depends what game we're covering.
Yeah, it does. And I know Paul is not going to be able to make every game.
I also need to contact Coach Ciccatelli from Revere. We're not going to. We may see them for a game this fall if we can fit.
And we got to get a Lynn English and Lynn Classical as well.
Yeah, and that would be the easiest route to go is to go up to Manning Bowl.
Absolutely.
And do it from there. And I know he'd appreciate it, and their fans would love it as well.
All right. I appreciate you, Coach. Thanks for coming in.
Does that mean I'm getting a raise?
I'll double your salary.
Yes.
As soon as I can pay for my health insurance. All right.
Oh.
All right, that'll take care of it. That's Tim Kearns having a meltdown over here.
There goes my race.
I know. Our producer and engineer, Bill Popovsky, and I'm Rick Moore. So I thank you for joining us. Our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. We want to keep this thing going. So thank you very much. We will talk to you later. This is msonewsports.com.